Now, I want to ask you a few questions.
I know, I hope so.
Yeah. Isn't this the first album where you don't play one note on the bass that
you've
ever made?
Yes, it is.
First, so it's a kind of a beginning, right?
Yeah, it
I
is.
Mean, in a way, it's the first. Now, why did you decide to make an entire album playing only piano?
I've always wanted to play piano, man. That's, see, it's, at home, I was going to be a piano player. At least in my heart, they said, what do you want to play? But my sister already played piano, and they had to spend the money for her, and they wouldn't spend it for me, so I had to choose another instrument. And somehow, someone had told my father, I'd heard him discussing that a colored kid should play a cello, so he could switch over to bass. And I said, well, I want to play cello, because I heard a man tell my father that. And the piano, man, I just think I would have been a good piano player. I'm sure, you know, I haven't got time now. I know that, you know, the technical facility I have on bass, I haven't even touched it. I can go do anything,
yes,
you know?
Yes, of course.
And so I know when I can tell how hard I'm struggling. I've tried to get the left hand up. I'm not going to really make it to do on the piano what I want, so I'm going back to bass. You know, understand me?
But you will, in the future, you plan to play bass?
And piano,
but
yes.
But continue on piano,
yes,
too?
Yeah, but I made a mistake of putting down the bass. Yes. There was no mistake, because I just grabbed the other day, and I was telling, in the book, there's a piece called Valse Minuet that Jimmy Blanton used to play,
yes,
written by Serge Koussevitzky.
Yes.
And so Slam Stewart...
was a cello player, too.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
He was a great cello player.
Yeah, I would like to hear him. On cello. I know he played the solo bass.
And bass,
beautiful,
too. Yeah,
yeah, he played
this great
bass. Beautiful. Oh, man. Unbelievable. That's what the piece, some of the things he did, Valse Minuet and Chanson Threes. So Slam Stewart was at a jam session, and Jimmy Blanton came by, and Red Connell, he was playing Red Connell's bass, and Slam kind of felt, I don't know what he felt, but he said, can you bow in an intermission in the back room? And he said, oh, you can't bow. None of your kids can bow. Run on the bass, but you can't bow. And Jimmy's, oh, man, sweet person.
I know.
So I was nasty, and I felt, who's this cat picking on him? You know, because I said, man, he can cut you on, you know, bowing. And he said, oh, I don't cut him. He says, but I can bow, you know, a little bit. Very kind. He said, don't talk to that, Charlie. He always tried to tell me I didn't have the right approach. And so he wouldn't bow, so I took Red's bass, and I started playing the thing, and real bad. It's called Volume 1. It's a very hard, tough piece. And he took it and played. Then we played a duet on it, and we was playing jazz against it,
uh-huh,
improvising contrary motion. Jimmy Blanton.
You and Blanton.
Yeah. I was just a kid then, man.
Yes.
But I had that kind of training first.
Yes.
And so I was telling my wife, I said, hey, man, it's a hard piece. I couldn't play it. I said, I bet I can't play it. And I grabbed the bass, and it came out better than ever, man. And I haven't even touched the bass, just like when I was a kid, rather than now, because I don't even bow no more. And I was kind of amazed that how the knowledge that the instrument is. I don't even think of notes. It's like, dung, the sound, you know?
Yes.
I don't say B flat. I got to look at the notes in the piano and all that.
Yes.
And bass is just there, man.
It's just there.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had a career now for about, say, professionally, for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes.
I mean, you started in the early 40s.
Oh, easy, yeah.
Or late 30s, early 40s.
That's right, 41,
so
39,
about,
with Louis Armstrong.
It's 20 years, right?
Yeah.
What was your first job?
Louis Armstrong.
Oh, yeah?
Not my first job.
I mean,
that's
your
the first
job
big time.
With a name,
yeah,
band.
Yeah, I was with Lee Young. Well, that's kind of big in a way.
Yeah.
Lee Young is Lester's brother. And we was working at the Club Alabama, and Louis Armstrong came in and liked me for some reason, and asked me to join the band. I never knew what he meant. The guy said he was making a Southern tour. So I got in the band and made a few one nights, and he got to the South, and the guy started telling me about the South, how it was.
You'd never been South before?
No, man, but the older fellas, they said, now, you gotta be careful when you get down there, and I just, it began to tear me out inside, because I knew I would get killed.
Yes.
They told me some of the things they'd been through, and they said, if you can't condition yourself to this, man, you ought to ask Louis that you go back home.
Yes.
And so I asked Louis on a boat, man. He made him turn the ferry back around and take me back to the pier.
Oh, yes?
I don't know how he did it. Money, I guess, could get you to do anything.
And you left him?
Yeah, and he got somebody down south.
But you went with him for a while?
Yes. Oh, yeah, I played
how
quite a while.
How long did you stay with Louis?
Oh, let me see. About 2 months.
About 2 months.
Making a tour around the United States, all around the East Coast, mm-hmm, Coast, West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Then he going south. And I remember we got to Chicago and places like that.
And then you left and Johnson.
Yeah, and man, you know, we're very good friends even today. We see him on the street, hey, Mingus, you know? Because, you know, he understood being,
sure,
you know, I didn't know,
sure,
what I was doing out there.
Sure, because he came from there, so
yeah,
he had that,
yeah,
since he was a child.
Well, you got to live.
Sure.
And I didn't, you know, I probably would have made it, Nez. I probably would have made it. I hate to think about it. Because I remember I did what kind of go south with Lionel Hampton and saw some things you wouldn't believe.
You did go south with Hampton?
Yeah.
How long were you with Hampton?
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah, 2 years. That was smooth. That was a testing ground, man. I dig Lionel, man.
Were you fooling around with the piano all this time?
Oh, yeah, always, man.
Always? Always have?
Yeah. That's so, before,
but most people don't know that. Most people don't know you. You know, don't know.
Well, everything I compose is on piano. Like, anything you ever heard me, like, for instance, Lovebird, those things have all been played first by me on piano, or else I wouldn't give it to any musician to play. Yeah. I think if it can't be played by the composer, then he shouldn't ask anyone else to play it.
That's right.
It may sound funny, but now I may not be able to play it like Bud Powell, but I can say, I'm going to flip it on you, man. I ain't played it in years, you know? I can play the things, and the finger may not be right, but that's what I compose, man.
You always compose everything on the piano first.
Spontaneous, and the latest thing I've done since tape is to make on tape first and change them around, you know?
Now, I noticed one thing. You know, we've been recording together for many years now. There is never any written music at your, any of your record sessions, right? I don't think I've hardly ever... Have I ever... I don't think
no,
ever
by the time we get there, we put
so
it away.
How do you teach the members of your band your pieces, which aren't simple pieces by any means?
Well, I'm very... You got the band, this band here. Actually, Jimmy Nipper and Booker have been with me years ago.
Yes.
Well, some of the guys didn't stay long, like John Handy, for instance. But they would learn how to... memorize. I taught them scales that go against every chord, and they begin to find that the hearing is simple, much simpler than they thought. For instance, I think it's hypnosis, man. I did with Danny very, very much. I said, man, like, you got that. Like, you, I know you can do it. You use that thing a whole lot. Yeah. I said, I know you can do this, man, because, like, you think it's hard. As soon as you, I said, if you learn this one note here, that's the only one that's hanging you up. He may have 80 notes, but I show here's the hard interval, and once you learn that, then you're straight. And Booker, man, I can take, if I say whatever the piece is, one time, he's got it.
But actually, your method of composition is rather different from other people, because it seems to me that although your pieces are very carefully composed, you still leave them a lot of freedom, even in the playing of the, I'm not talking about the ad lib solos,
in the composition.
The parts of the composition, there's a lot of freedom. More than in many groups, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, you had a good question. See, not a question. You can help to even listen. What I do is, I know, it's kind of saying, I guess I'm not selfish. I know if I got a thing, like if I say to Booker like this, well, I know that he can do this. As long as he starts where I start and end where I end. He may say, he make many different movements.
And they do.
Yeah, and I think this is better.
And when we do two takes on one tune, actually, even the composed parts can be quite different from one take to the other, which shows that even within the composition,
they exchange it. He has the right to. This, I think, is good, though, healthy. I got this idea.
I think it's great, but I think you're the only man who's doing it.
It could be. Could be, I don't know.
I think
Jerry Lee Martin did it, though.
Jerry Lee Martin did that, too.
I think, now I'm telling you, man, I didn't know this. Martin Williams drugged me. Because there's a thing going out now where guys take one card and they play on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's something else Jerry Lee Martin did. Well, see, I was very interested in this when I first thought I discovered it. And Martin says, well, Jerry Lee Martin did that, and here's some music he showed me he did it, and I dropped the whole thing. I tell you what, I've noticed, to answer that question, I go back to Lionel Hampton again. I've seen Lionel Hampton, which I'm sure mass hypnosis. He's by him throwing himself completely in and accepting the full spirit of the composition, he's made people jump out of the bleachers and break their legs.
Yes.
Now, you know this is fact.
I have seen.
Now, anybody work with him, they learn two things. You learn, you learn what that is, and you learn, like Jacket and all the guys, that they go complete overboard with this thing, that showman thing. I guess they call it showman. Lionel, don't call it showman. He is putting his complete heart in it.
That's right.
There's a difference in saying than watching yourself affect people than throwing yourself in. Well, I try to see the Hamp's reason. And when I go out to my flame, I have to wait a month sometime to get to flaming his fingers. When I get out there, I say, all right, Hamp, here it is. And I put my whole heart in it. And I find out that the whole people, everybody feels it. And so playing with the band, and only certain people it affects. I haven't got this one guy, I call his name again, John Handy. I can never get to John. It's because he's isolated in another world that's just as strong.
Yes.
Because John is always conscious that he wants to be a leader. I mean, you would call John Doe,
yes.
if you want to use this
yes.
example.
Yes.
But people like Booker and people who are happy and content and can throw themselves in the plane.
Yeah, well, I have to go with my many examples.
Yeah.
For instance, mm-hmm. and some of them, they're great musicians when they play with you, and they're great musicians when they play on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not
two different
the
things.
Same.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. This is what it shouldn't
when,
be,
when
man.
When they play with you,
and when I play with them, I should play different.
Yeah.
This is what I learned, man. I played hip, I didn't play my music. I played hands music. You helped me say what I want to say. That's what. This is what is probably wrong. Why I can't play with anybody? Because, I mean, as a side man, I would like to. You know, I used to try and say, well, I don't be a band leader. Be like George Duvivier. Just make me a few dates, and make me some record dates, and make it. But I find that by the time other guys lose their identity, the record date is over with. And it's too late to save the music. Because they're trying to hold on to what they believe rather than say, what does this composer mean, and give themselves up for the whoever
yes.
the leader is.
But they somehow seem to fall. I've seen musicians who've been with you for a very short time,
yeah,
and they're playing your music and not their music when they play with
yeah.
you somehow. I mean, it's part of them too.
Yeah. You're right, man.
It fits into your music.
I got two cats I couldn't change too well. Remember Charlie and Lonnie?
Yes.
The bebop kids from Detroit?
Yes.
I finally got them even. I started making them, putting scale, two different keys on them to make them get out of that bebop line.
Yes.
Because, see, I wasn't combating them. I was trying to fight Charlie Parker, and he's dead.
Yes.
If you got a guy that's completely brainwashed by somebody like that, you can't change them, what they're doing, because Bird's not here to show him what he would do with my music.
That's right.
You know, in fact, Bird would have played my music different.
That's right.
I know he would have, man.
That's right.
That would have been something else.
For instance, Jackie McLean with you
mm-hmm.
was playing your music.
Another thing. Now he's back to what he was doing before.
Yeah. But when it was with you, he was great, but he was playing a different kind of music.
And something else, man, you notice when I was back, Willie Jones and those drummers like that, if you notice always trying to have Jimmy Nip and Danny there, without them it wouldn't happen. I'm pretty sure of that. Jimmy for the lines and the way I phrase things,
yes.
and he also knows he'll show a cat wrong. Almost, you know, like I said, and he'll play it the way I used to play it, and you hear these two melodies going. Because
yes.
he knows that I don't want it the exact same way every time.
Yes. Yes.
See,
he'll change
yeah,
it on his
yeah,
own.
Yeah, yeah. He was give Booker a little different line, and Booker said, "Well, you got a B flat." He said, well, "I know, I'm, you know."
Yes.
yeah, but Danny, I'm getting a little older. Although I don't think it is really anymore. I felt like I was getting tired. That's another reason I kind of laid off bass. I used to have Monk's got the most perfect time in the world. I used to have that kind of time, man. I know it. When it never get lost, you know, but. Taking so many drummers like I did before I got Danny,
yes.
and even teaching him was hard, man.
Yes.
Although he was very talented, if you remember, I think you caught him right away.
In the very beginning.
Yeah.
That's right. And technically, he wasn't very strong in those days.
No.
He just begun to play drums.
Yeah.
And yet, he was doing it. I mean, even then, you could tell.
It was in his head, man. I showed him a way that all musicians should learn. He was trying to do things that you like Max, that's good. I said, now, Max makes, you know, okay, now you're going to make this like that. I said, suppose your stick slips. Well, you're supposed to listen to that and make something out of that, too. So this cat began to learn. I said, the whole idea is to keep the time in your mind. And if you make a mistake, remember that mistake, and next time make it part of the music. You know, and
yes.
keep that time going, you know.
Yes.
And I hear that in this playing now. He's got Max, and he's got the mistakes. He's got everything else that goes on now.
But he's making
very well.
It's incredible how he's improved.
Yeah, man.
He's been with you about 5 years.
Yeah, right? At least.
Now, how about? This is the first time you're singing, right? This is the album of firsts.
Well, see, not really, because I've always been saying things that would, if a mic had been close, like you did this time.
Yes.
In fact, you did it once before, I believe, when I hollered.
Yeah.
On
That's right.
The Blues and Roots.
That's
but
right.
I just was afraid. I always want to say things, and people say I'm hollering. Man, I feel that. I'm not affecting that. And on a job, I do it. I'll be singing a song, and that's how Fables of Fabulous was born. By just, I say, name me someone who's ridiculous one night, Danny. And he said, he named one guy. He only could think of one guy. Then pretty soon, he named about 10 or 20, you know. And I don't know. I don't think about it as showmanship. I think it's trying to be creative on the spot and think of words. Like, I didn't plan those words, and after I heard what I did, I wish I'd have thought a little longer on that and sung some more, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I kind of like my voice, man.
I like it too.
I heard possibilities in it being a you know, a good voice, eh? Really, yeah. You know, after, I didn't really know until I heard this Devil Woman.
But do you listen much to blues singers and so on?
You know, I was, oh man, you know, Joe Turner?
I'm asking you this for the tape,
no? Oh,
you
know, yeah, interview. Yeah, with Joe Turner, you know, T-Bone Walker? Yeah. I pretty raised with him, man.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, raised with T-Bone, man.
One of my best friends.
T-Bone got me a job. Well, I got this job with Joe Turner, and which I didn't realize what I was really getting into. You know, I didn't realize that now the value of the people I play with, Kid Ory, and to know that when I get scared of and tired of hearing the same riffs playing for the young so-called modern kids around that are playing Bird, I can lean back and say, well, this is the way Joe felt, man, being in that environment. Because he's always telling me, man, this is, don't ever let that go.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. And then I didn't, man, I still, I know you got Joe, and I'm hurting your feelings, but T-Bone Walker, man, I think he hasn't been used right.
I know. You go and you do a
session. Man, he can just sit and make up songs, like the folk singers do with his guitar. With Charlie Mingus, I'm going to sing the blues.
Yes.
Words you never heard before. And he just make up a whole story, and you flip, man.
It's time on guitarist.
Yeah.
Fantastic, isn't it?
Is this something, man?
Huh?
Yeah, he's something, man.
He's another one that can hypnotize.
Yeah.
Just, you know, yeah. He plays those low notes on the guitar.
Right? He invented the thing that most everybody use now on all the instruments, on the strings. Boom, dang, dong, dang, all about your dang, dang.
Oh, that's T-Bone Walker.
Yeah, well, a lot of horns started that, man.
Yeah. So you grew up with all those people, huh?
Yeah, well, I worked with all those people. And then I said Kid Ory, I guess you know about that.
Did you play with Ory?
Yeah, that was...
In the 40s?
Well, you can help me. It's in the 40s, and you probably get the exact date. It's when Barney Bigard left Duke Ellington.
Oh, I know. I heard that band. What year
was that? Yeah, that band. Billy Berg's.
Yeah. I was there every night.
Yeah, exactly. That was a bad band, man.
I was there. That was Kid Ory's first job, because he'd been retired for 10 years.
Yeah.
He came back, and he was in Barney's band. But it wasn't called Billy Berg's, because it was...
His new fancier place.
Yeah.
It's facing the ice skating rings.
Yeah, it was out west a little.
I'm trying to remember the name of the place, because it's in my book.
I know that.
He says, man, I'm playing the same thing I played. I'm going to try and change it. What's this music they call now? Bebop? Well, we're going to play whatever I play.
Who said that?
Kid Ory. He says, so let's go crawfishing.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a funny guy.
That was in 43.
Yeah. Then you were out there when they had Lester Young and Lee Young band?
Yeah, I was there.
With Bumps Myers and remember the trumpet player Camel?
Of course.
Red Mack was in that band after him. Yeah.
I used to hear that band. They were playing in the same club, too. They played that club, I think.
So that was Swing. That was, he had the Capri. Remember the Capri? And he had a Swing Club.
Yes. You played the Capri, man.
I played all of them.
No, with Ory and Barney Bigard.
That's what it was, Capri. It was, huh?
That's the Capri. That's where it was, the Capri.
Yeah.
That's where you played with Barney and Ory.
Because he had a Swing Club.
I have a picture of that band someplace. Now, some people will think, maybe I'm wrong, but let me just ask you this question. Some people will think that in some of these pieces, you're putting the music down.
Putting someone on. No.
But you're not doing that.
No,
right?
No, man.
I think we should make it very clear.
I'm not trying to play no game with you, man. This is my book. This thing here is very much like my book. There's certain things standing out that I can pinpoint now. And I say, well, I don't even want the public to see this. And everything here is what I want to see. We have some things we threw away.
Yes, that's right.
Everything here is things that are close to me. Some things weren't, man. And
actually, this session, unless I'm mistaken, this session was not really carefully planned as some of your other albums were planned. I mean, you came and...
Well, we played.
Right? I mean, you played and you sang things as they occurred to you.
It was very natural.
You hadn't rehearsed those lyrics and so on.
No, I just didn't. No, I had no idea. No.
It was really, you were improvising the words along with everything. Yeah.
I spoke to Jerry. He's going to hear a word.
Okay.
On the studio line.
Okay.
Yes, that's what's
wrong. Wait, it's not finished.
Yeah, okay.
There are a couple things I want to...
Okay, I'm going to still be talking about that one, though. I'll keep talking to him while he's going to close the door, man.
All right.
How could I put down Fats Waller? How could I put down the kind of thing I was singing on Devil Woman or Ecclesiastics when this is everything that's in my life? Fats is in my life and jazz or whatever music you want to call it. Or I wouldn't be playing. It's a music that he was responsible for that creates my living. And Ecclesiastic is a bastardization of the word ecclesiastic. And I, as I said, you just announced it, it's still my identity is trying to be accepted by my own people as a black man. The whole struggle, the whole truth in this record of what I think good of myself and bad of myself is in this one record here. So if it's insincere, then I'm not alive, because you can't live and be insincere. I mean, I'm trying to hang on to everything that I know is true, and I'm looking down at your titles right now. Oh, Lord, don't even drop the Tommy Bahama Me. And I know it's a selfish title, because some other people don't want to drop nowhere near them. Now, Hardcore and Blues was after I wrote a tune and given the lines out, Roland Kirk took over and played his way, and by me staying and playing what I'd written in the forums and not going to him, I would have destroyed the piece. So I saw what he had, and it came out like a farmyard smells. You know what I'm talking about? If you get near it, you're going to know some pigs around there. And I said, my friend, Wham, sure, it's funny how you got it. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. You got quotations and question marks and things, you know, because that's the way I would feel. That if you write what Max would feel at a certain time when he'd say this thing as a question, and what is the answer to my life, Mingus? Where do I go? What is it all about? So it's like, it shouldn't be like that, Mingus. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's supposed to be clean and cut dry so I know what the answer is. And Passions of a Man is still tying up as me trying to be identify myself with something. I've often felt no flag, no country, no love or nothing. And maybe as you say, it's me living in a world that I made for myself. I don't know this yet. You could be right. You haven't said this about me, but you said it could be this, that people do this. Maybe I've done this to myself. But I doubt that all of it is like this. There's some reality in the fact that they are killing each other. I mean, races are killing each other because, not really because they're a certain race, really. It's a little cleaner now. You can tell what it is now. You can tell that it's the economic setup of a system. So here I made a record called Passions of a Man, and I would have said it was like the Passions of a Black Man. But the black people that I've met in the past, which affected me most is my childhood, made me feel that I wasn't good enough to be black. I wasn't like, who am I? Like, you know, my hair wasn't beautiful, nappy like there was. My skin wasn't dark, ebony, black, and beautiful like they were. Until I learned to segregate and segregate myself from them. And I go to the white man, he wouldn't accept me. So I end up by myself and find maybe a Japanese kid who would say hello. And we finally get a couple of words in the next hour and it said, how you doing? And he finally told me he was kind of lonely because nobody talked to him. And we got a little kind of another thing going. And a couple other cats, you know, like a couple of color cats came in, like Buddy Collette. He was black as tar, but he came in with us because he didn't dig the black cats or the yellow cats that congregated and segregated and made hate up. And there was a Jewish fellow there named Levy. I don't remember his first name now, but I remember it was Levy. And there was a Greek fellow who was part of the store. These kind of people got together and started talking about things that I don't think people are talking about yet. And that's just still trying to tell you that if this record ain't sincere, then I'm not sincere. I'm not here. So you're not hearing nothing. I'm not really saying nothing else.